Good morning and welcome to the KGNU Morning Magazine for Thursday, April 15th. I'm Sam Fuqua. Coming up after state and local headlines, policy and public opinion around marijuana and psychedelics are changing here in Colorado and around the country. We'll hear about two opportunities to learn more. Also, our regular Thursday morning visit from John Lendorf with Radio Nibbles, followed as always by an update on news from the BBC, then our monthly trends program. KGNU's bilingual reporter Rosanna Longo brings us Boulder County voices on gun violence and gun control, including mothers and students. That program coming your way just after the BBC headlines at 8:30. It goes through till 9:30, at which time you'll hear our day of diverse music begin with the Morning Sound Alternative. It's all still ahead here on listener-supported KGNU, all made possible by our listener members. Thank you, members. Checking state and local news now. Several counties in Colorado are looking at loosening health restrictions as of tomorrow. Denver will allow restaurants and gyms to return to 100% capacity. Other metro counties, including Boulder and Broomfield, will move to level blue, which will allow bars that don't offer food to reopen. The 7-day rolling average of Boulder County residents whose COVID-19 swab tests results are positive continues on an upward trend, with the positivity rate now hovering around 5.7%. That's close to the statewide positivity average. COVID incidence in Boulder County is highest among college-age residents, followed by school-age children from 10 to 17 years of age. Cases among college-age residents are falling after a surge that coincided with spring break vacations. Boulder County is averaging 59 new daily cases. The virus has killed a total of 250 Boulder County residents, most of them associated with long-term care facilities. Deaths in Boulder County have steadily declined as vaccination rates rise. Alfalfa's Market, one of the original natural food stores in the Boulder area, will close its lone Louisville store today. Steve Miller reports.
Alfalfa's Market was in business for nearly 40 years. The Daily Camera reports that the company blamed the weakness in the company's financial health and the pandemic as the main reasons to dissolve the company. Their struggles go back a number of years. Then in 2018, a new ownership group took over, and the company felt optimistic it would be able to turn itself around. Alfalfa closed its longtime Boulder store in late February, but the company president said at the time that the Longmont and Louisville stores would remain open. Weeks later, the Longmont store closed a little more than 5 months after it was opened. The company still has financial obligations, and even though it is dissolving, it's unclear if it intends to file bankruptcy or if it has another plan. The market said it will hold a final inventory sale at the Louisville store today. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
Inflation is rising faster in Colorado, according to new data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Measures of typical household costs rose 1.4% in March. That's four times higher than the 0.4 rate in January. Gasoline prices were up 22% in March compared to 2 months earlier. And electricity costs are also up almost 20% compared to this time last year. There was a bit of good news in the federal data. Food prices dropped 2% over the last 2 months. And a World War II prison camp for Japanese Americans may become a National Historic Site under legislation introduced Wednesday by two Colorado congressmen. Camp Amache in southeast Colorado housed over 7,000 Americans of Japanese descent under a 1942 presidential executive order. Republican Representative Ken Buck and Democratic Representative Jonah Goose are co-sponsoring a bill to bring the camp into the national park system as an official federal historic site. The bill is scheduled for its first hearing on April 21st. Cloudy with light rain and snow today, highs near 40 along the Front Range, overnight lows in the 20s. Cloudy with light snow in the forecast tomorrow, temperatures Friday set to reach the upper 30s. It's 10 minutes after 8 o'clock. This is KGNU. past decade saw Colorado voters make some big changes to drug laws. The biggest was the 2012 passage of Amendment 64, which made recreational marijuana legal for adults over 21. 2 years ago, in spring 2019, Denver voters decriminalized the use of psychedelic mushrooms. Social scientists and historians are studying these developments, and there are a couple of opportunities for the general public to learn more over the next few days. CU Boulder is hosting the 2021 Virtual Cannabis and Psychedelic Symposium. To learn more about that, we spoke with Dr. Carol Konzelman, senior instructor, the Institute for Global Studies at CU Boulder. Also, Natalie Borman and Casey Hogan, two undergraduate students who helped organize the symposium. We began by asking Carol Konzelman about academic interest in drugs.
What is it about drugs and drug use that makes this an interesting area of study for anthropologists and social scientists generally?
That's a great question. Well, the whole issue of drugs and drug policy is something that actually pervades all of our lives, but we actually know very little about. And so I teach a course on the anthropology of drugs and drug policy to get to the root causes of a lot of the issues that we have today, such as mass incarceration and drug overdose, and even the drug trade worldwide. And it's important to understand that these kinds of crises that we have in our society don't just arrive out of thin air. There's actually a deep history that has most to do with ethnocentrism, this idea of a clash of cultures, a misunderstanding, and as well as racism in the roots of drug prohibition policies. And so if you really step back and think about it, it's pretty shocking that the two most addictive and lethal drugs that we have, being alcohol and nicotine, are actually legal. And yet therapeutic and medicinal substances that have been used for thousands of years by cultures around the world, such as psilocybin mushrooms and cannabis, that they are considered Schedule I narcotics. So we just need to pull back the veil and try to uncover what's really going on here.
And let me ask you both, Natalie and Casey, you're both undergrads. What is behind your interest in this topic? Start with you, Natalie.
I heard about the psychedelic club first coming into CU, and I thought it was really interesting. And I think that what really spoke to me was the fact that they had the 420 smoke out thing, which was kind of riddled with privilege. And, you know, I think that the way that we've turned that around and made it into something that's inclusive and tries to address so many different perspectives and hear and listens to so many experts who know so much about this, I think that that's just so invaluable to all of us, really.
Let me ask you just about the 420 event, which was a big gathering for people to openly smoke marijuana on campus. Happened over several years. You called it a privileged event. I'm inferring by that you mean it was a bunch of white kids, many of them from affluent backgrounds, smoking pot without fear of reprisal. Is that what you mean?
Exactly. In contrast to, as Carol was speaking about, you know, mass incarceration, just the disproportionate targeting of people of color, like primarily Black people, being targeted for the same things that white people so easily get away with and aren't persecuted for.
Casey, what's your interest in this topic?
So I decided to take the psychology path because I, you know, want to help people. But I have realized through this class that a lot of psychology in the last, you know, few decades has been, you know, just big pharma medicines, just passing out pills. And I think that this class has showed me that there's so much more and there's so many different ways we can help people through these different drugs that have been so misinformed in the media. There's so much misinformation about these drugs and their uses. And I feel like the stigmas behind them are making it really hard for people at my age to learn about them. And so I'm really grateful for this class because it has showed me a lot that I feel like a lot of people don't even have the access to this information. And so I'm really hopeful and excited for the future of where these drugs can go.
Let's talk about the symposium. Carol Konzelman, give us an overview of some of the things that perhaps are most exciting to you about it.
Sure. Well, this event started in 2014, and so we have endeavored to bring a holistic perspective on these topics, which are with a range of experts and disciplinary angles as well. So we started on Friday evening with a film screening of a new documentary called Psychedelia that talks about the history of psychedelic therapies, and with a Q&A with the director. That's Friday, 6 to 7:30 p.m. And then the main event is all day Saturday with opening plenary by Dr. Marty Otañez from CU Denver talking about labor issues in the cannabis industry. We have two panels, one on racial justice and one on drug users and activism. And then we have a faculty keynote from a professor from University of Washington talking about new paradigms of drug use and how we talk about this and harm reduction and things like that. And then our real coup this year is that Dr. Dennis McKenna, who is a world-renowned ethnopharmacologist and longtime researcher of psychedelics in South America, especially the Amazon region, and he's going to give our closing plenary talk in the afternoon at 4:30 to 5:30.
Alert listeners may note that last name. Of course, Dennis is the brother of the late Terrence McKenna, who worked in the same field and really, I think, broke through to popular culture on that topic.
Well, that's right. And the title of Dr. McKenna's talk is called "Our Teacher Plants, Natural Psychedelics, Symbiosis, and the Promise of Drug Policy Reform." And his focus is similar to his brother Terrence, where they are trying to help repair the relationship between humans and plants.
Casey, any particular session that is of special interest to you?
I'm really looking forward to the panel on racial injustice. I think that right now, more than ever in our country, we're extremely divided, and it's really important to start these kinds of conversations. And I think especially at Boulder, which is a very privileged, majority white school, I think we need to be having these conversations. And I think that drugs often play a huge role in these topics, and we don't often talk about that enough.
Carol, anything you'd like to add in closing? Perhaps some details on how people can participate?
Yeah, so this event is free and open to the public. We are excited to reach a more national and even international audience this year because it is via Zoom. You do have to register if you go to cannapsychsymp.com, and that's with two N's in the canna. And there you can register and see the full schedule and speaker bios. And we're just excited to open up this event and build bridges between students and faculty and the broader public.
That's Dr. Carol Konzelman, senior instructor in the Institute for Global Studies at CU Boulder. We also heard from Natalie Borman and Casey Hogan, two undergraduate students who helped organize the 2021 Virtual Cannabis and Psychedelics Symposium. It is free and open to the public, but registration is required, and we have a link to that on the Morning Magazine page at kgnu.org. Where it's 20 minutes after 8 o'clock. In addition to the symposium this weekend, Colorado's History Museum, History Colorado, is hosting a presentation this evening on the history of cannabis legalization in the state. Featured presenter is hemp entrepreneur Susan Squibb. She spoke with KGNU's Remy Katchadourian.
Susan Squibb was one of the first hemp businesses owners in Boulder back in the late 90s. She was an activist for the legalization of marijuana in Colorado and is the founder of Mother's High Tea, an annual conference that promotes the advancement of women in the marijuana industry. She's invited to give a talk on Thursday, April 15, for the History Colorado Center. We asked her how she got invited.
I have been sorting through my archive that I've collected over the past 25 years and gave History Colorado Center the first crack at taking anything that they wanted. So they took a lion's share of my cannabis archive that I've been saving for the past 25 years.
What are the most important moments or memories that you have?
Many of my favorite memories are related to the political victories, the passage of Amendment 20, passage of Amendment 64, and working at Red Rocks, managing the hemp ice cream booth for 200 concerts. Those are my highlights.
What do you think is next in Colorado in terms of what we can do to change the laws still in a good way?
I think that there are three main areas that are being addressed by local activists and advocates. There is social equity, so giving women and people of color opportunities and access to establishing businesses. There's many parents that are trying to get children's access and use of medical marijuana at schools for children that severely really need that medicine. And the third is social consumption. Oh my goodness, Colorado has lost a lot of footing as a leader, particularly on social consumption. In Colorado, and Denver in particular, needs to get with it and really have a significant response and ability to have places for people to consume.
How people can sign up for this conference?
So the History Colorado Center website, so it's part of their monthly series in person. It's a Zoom event on Thursday, April 15th at 6 p.m. So it's an hour program and people can get tickets. It's $5 for general population, $3 for museum members. Just go to the History Colorado Center website to the events tab and you'll find the April 15th talk link right there.
Thank you, Susan.
Thank you.
For KGNU, this is Remy Kachadorian.
And again, that's longtime hemp entrepreneur and marijuana legalization activist Susan Squibb talking about the history of legalization in Colorado. This evening at 6, we do have information and a link to get tickets on our website on the Morning Magazine page for today. The National Weather Service forecasting a mix of light rain and snow throughout the day with a high near 40, overnight lows in the 20s, cloudy and light snow in the forecast for tomorrow as well, highs on Friday in the upper 30s. Time for our regular Thursday morning visit from John Lendorf with Radio Nibbles.
Everybody eats when they come to my house.
Time for Radio Nibbles. John Lendorf with us from his kitchen in Louisville. And John, this morning we're going to talk beer.
Well, and as well we should. And with us today is Mike Casey, who some of you may know from reviewing movies for the Boulder Weekly. And he's written extensively about beer locally. And he's got a new book out. Hi, Mike.
Hi, nice to be here.
Tell us about the book, about the history of beer in Boulder.
So the book is called Boulder County Beer, and it is, like you said, it is a history of the brewing industry in Boulder County. The story starts in 1979, and we take it all the way up to 2015, essentially with the opening of Avery Brewing's new facility out in Gun Barrel. And it explores how an industry that didn't exist in 1979 exploded into what is now a billion-dollar industry. There's now 55 breweries in the county, but not just that this industry was created, but why is Boulder County, why is it such a hotbed? Why did it become this like cradle of craft beer during the early days of the nationwide craft beer movement? Why mm-hmm. is the American Homebrewers Association headquartered here? Why is the Brewers Association headquartered here? Why was the first Great American Beer Festival here? And I get into just exploring how this scene built upon itself, where everyone who came to Boulder County to start their breweries, to start their industries, where they came from, why they came here. I talked to many different brewers. I talked to Randolph Ware from Boulder Brewing. I talked to Dale Kachis from Oscar Blues. I talked to Adam Avery, Eric Wallace from Left Hand, a bunch of different guys, George Hanna, who used to do the Oasis. So there's a lot of brewers in there that have come and gone. And kind of what kind of ripples came forth from their time in the industry. So it's I think it's an interesting story that isn't just about beer. It's about a way of life and an industry and like these economic clusters that kind of crop up.
How much of an impact do you think? It started largely, I mean, some of it started because of Charlie Papazian and homebrewing and his sort of attitude towards collaborative brewing. I thought it seems like he kind of set the tone for that.
What's really interesting about Papazian and Ware and George Hanna and those guys who came in the first round, and this goes up into the 90s too with like Adam Avery and Bob Bialy, is that the sense that they came to Boulder because Boulder had mountains, it had nature that you could come and you could ski, you could hike, you could climb, and it had the Boulder liberal mindset. And they were just very attracted to this kind of thing. Like Dale Caches came from the South. And the reason he came to Boulder is because he couldn't make it to Montana. But when he landed in Boulder, he's like, all right, this is the place that I'm going to be because this is very different from home. So they came here for the lifestyle of Colorado. You talk to a lot of the brewers that have opened up breweries in the past like 10 years, they came to Boulder County because of the beer. So it becomes this kind of feedback loop almost of that the people who first came here to establish the brewing in the county just kind of added it to the lifestyle that already existed. Now the people who are coming here because the beer is so good that they want to get in on this.
And I was telling Sam, I got here in 1976. And that was exactly one beer brewed in Colorado and none in Boulder. And what a remarkable, trip it's been. At the end of every Radio Nibbles show, Sam asked me or I ask him, what's the best thing you've tasted lately? So let me ask you, what are a couple of, what's the best beer you've tasted lately from Boulder County?
So lately is a non-starter, so I'll go with the ones I'm dreaming of because Southern Sun and Under the Sun and Long's Peak just reopened. They were closed for a while, which means that we can now go back to Southern Sun and have some delicious Colorado Kind Ale with some of the best wings out there, and I just cannot wait to get back up there and just sit down on one of those wooden benches and enjoy a pint.
I could go for a stout right now.
Yes. I believe they're going to do Stout Month in September this year, so we'll be able to recapture what was missed in February.
See you there. Thanks, Mike. I really appreciate you dropping in and getting back into our local history here.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Michael Casey's book is called Boulder County Beer, A Refreshing History. And John Lendorf's Radio Nibbles are archived at kgnu.org, his food writing at johnlendorf.wordpress.com, and of course, he has the Global Pie Society on Facebook, a busy guy. But thanks for making time with us again on Radio Nibbles.
Bon appetit, everyone.
Everybody eats when they come to my house. I fix your favorite dish.
And that's the last Radio Nibbles you'll be hearing for a good while on KGNU. John Lendorf is taking an indefinite sabbatical. He's fine, just looking for a break after about 25 years of producing this program, which has been a fixture of Thursday mornings here on KGNU. You will still hear John on KGNU for special programs, including during membership drives, but Radio Nibbles going on indefinite sabbatical as of today. This is listener-supported KGNU.